United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. The AP Sagarmagani reports President Biden is praising Haiti for sending troops to quell the gang uprising in Haiti and defending the lack of American forces.
A multinational force in Haiti will include about 1,000 Kenyan police officers.
The women and children in Haiti deserve peace.
Kenyan President William Ruto at the White House with President Biden, who says the U.S. will give $300 million to support that force. He opted against sending American personnel for a simple reason.
Just raises all kinds of questions that can be easily misrepresented.
While he's trying to avoid that, Ruto is facing legal challenges at home over why Kenyan forces will go overseas. Ruto says it's Kenya's duty as a democracy.
Insecurity, instability anywhere is insecurity and instability everywhere.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
The U.S. state of Louisiana's legislature approved a bill classifying abortion pills as controlled dangerous substances, the AP's Ed Donahue reports.
The drugs are mifepristone and misoprostol. Republican State Senator Thomas Presley filed the bill. His sister's husband was slipping her abortion-inducing drugs without her knowledge or consent.
I think this is the right thing to do. I think it will protect women while allowing those that have legitimate health care needs for these pills to continue to get these pills.
Numerous doctors say this will make it harder to prescribe the medicines women may need. Democratic State Senator Jay Luno says time delays could be fatal.
That just doesn't make sense. And I hope and pray that if and when that happens, it's not to one of our daughters or wives.
Louisiana currently has a near total abortion ban, applying both to surgical and medical abortions. I'm Ed Donahue.
And for more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Iran has interred late President Ibrahim Raisi at the holiest Shiite shrine in the nation days after a fatal helicopter crash killed him, the country's foreign minister, and six others. Raisi was placed Thursday inside a tomb at the Imam Reza Shrine in Mashhad, where Shiite Islam 8 Iman is buried. The death of Raisi, the country's foreign minister, and the six others in the crash Sunday comes at a politically sensitive moment for Iran, both at home and abroad. The U.S. assertion this week that Russia has launched a low-Earth orbit satellite capable of inspecting and destroying other satellites prompted a denial from the Kremlin and concern from U.S. lawmakers. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more on the prospect of conflict between the United States and Russia in space.
The Kremlin called the U.S. announcement fake news and said it would work towards international cooperation in space.
It will prevent turning space into yet another sphere of armed confrontation.
U.S. lawmakers concerned this is part of broader problems in the U.S.-Russia relationship.
Russia recently launched a counter-space weapon capable of attacking U.S. satellites. War criminal Putin should be deterred as we support our allies.
It just goes to show that, Russia is engaged in very aggressive tactics.
In November 2021, Russia conducted an anti-satellites weapon test, creating an orbital debris field. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
AP correspondent Karen Chalmers reports on a failed coup attempt in the Congo, which involved several U.S. citizens.
The family of an American caught up in a failed coup attempt in Congo said their son was in Africa on vacation with family friends and had not previously engaged in political activism. The stepmother of Tyler Thompson said the family was stunned and heartbroken by the video scene of the coup attempt. Thompson was among at least two other Americans who were named by the Congolese army as part of a failed effort to overthrow the government in Kinshasa. The coup was led by an eccentric, self-exiled leader, Christian Malanga, who was shot dead after resisting arrest. The two other Americans allegedly involved were a convicted marijuana trafficker and Malanga's 21-year-old son, Marcel, who was arrested by Congolese forces. I'm Karen Chamas.
Heavy rains once again pounded parts of Brazil's southernmost state Thursday, ruining days-long cleanup efforts and flooding areas that have previously been untouched in the city of Porto Alegre. Record flooding over the past month has killed 163 people and displaced 600,000 more. Another 64 people are still missing. For more news, join us, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Biden welcomes Kenyan President Ruto to the White House.
I'm proud to announce we're working with Congress to designate Kenya a major non-NATO ally. That's a fulfillment of years of collaboration.
President Ruto defends his decision to deploy Kenyan police to Haiti. We'll get analysis of President Ruto's visit to the United States. Populist parties could see gains in South Africa's May 29th election. Guinea's military government closes 4 radio and television stations.
We are not anymore owner of our frequencies. They're asking us to close everything and all material should be shut down as from today. What is the main problem? We do not know.
And are veterans better off under Biden or Trump? The stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Joe Biden on Thursday welcomed Kenyan President William Ruto to the White House, the first state visit by an African president to the White House since 2008. Biden announced he was working with the U.S. Congress to designate Kenya as a major non-NATO ally and help reduce the debt of developing countries.
Today, we mark 60 years of partnership between our democracies, and we're fulfilling that wish together. But through our partnership, we're continuing to meet our responsibilities in 4 key areas. First, I'm proud to announce we're working with Congress to designate Kenya a major non-NATO ally. That's a fulfillment of years of collaboration. Our joint counterterrorism operations have degraded ISIS and Al-Shabaab across East Africa. And our work together on Haiti. I want to thank you, Mr. President, for Kenya's leadership for multinational security support mission in Haiti. Second, we're deepening our economic cooperation. Right now, many countries' debt stands in the way of growth. Too many nations are forced to make a choice between development and debt. So today, we're launching what we're calling the Nairobi-Washington Vision. This initiative is going to bring together international financial institutions and nations from all around the world to mobilize more resources for countries saddled with debt, to open more opportunities to the private sector financing, and promote transparent, sustainable, and affordable lending practices. These are big goals. It's going to take time to see lasting progress, but we're providing $250 million, the United States is, to the World Bank in a crisis response window. In the coming weeks, the United States is going to make an additional $21 billion available to the International Monetary Fund. Today, I'm proud to announce there will be $250 billion in new lending capacity for multilateral development banks like the World Bank to help low-income nations invest in their development and tackle growing challenges. This is supported by the United States and many other countries as well.
President Joe Biden speaking Thursday when he welcomed Kenyan President William Ruto to the White House. Kenyan President William Ruto has appealed for U.S. support to strengthen democracy and security in Africa, reduce debt, and enhance its investment in the institutions of Africa integration. Ruto spoke Thursday when President Joe Biden welcomed him to the White House for his first state visit by an African president to the White House since 2008. Ruto defended his decision to deploy Kenyan police to Haiti.
Kenya believes that the responsibility of peace and security anywhere in the world, including in Haiti, is the collective responsibility of all nations and all peoples who believe in freedom, self-determination, democracy, and justice. And it is the reason why Kenya took up this responsibility, because we have been participating in peacemaking and we have been participating in peacekeeping over the last 40 years in 47 countries, including very difficult neighborhoods like what we're going to face in Haiti. We are going to take up that responsibility alongside the Haiti police, and we have clear modus operandi how we are going to relate with the situation on the ground that has been agreed under the United Nations framework. So we are looking forward to this deployment because we believe that the women and children in Haiti deserve peace like all other women and children and people around the world. I agree with President Biden that Kenya's participation in Haiti is not so much about what happened in the past. It's about what we believe in, the peace and security of humanity. And we don't find that the U.S. is committing Kenya, because the U.S. cannot commit Kenya. I am the president of Kenya, that decision. And it's the people of Kenya to commit their own troops using their own structures. We've gone through the processes in Kenya. Parliament has approved. We have a clear mandate. We have a clear framework. And it is us, the people of Kenya, who made this decision in the interest of serving peace and stability as a responsible global citizen, and understanding that insecurity, instability anywhere is insecurity and instability everywhere.
That was Kenyan President William Ruto speaking Thursday when he was welcomed to the White House by President Joe Biden. U.S. President Joe Biden has named Kenya as a major NATO ally, making it the first sub-Saharan African country to receive that designation. Biden made the announcement during a joint press conference on Thursday. Kenyan President William Ruto is on a three-day state visit to the U.S. For an analysis on what was said during the joint press conference, VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached political analyst David Monda.
I think both presidents tried to summarize the meeting or this state visit in a positive light. I think they reemphasized the common bond of both countries around the 60th anniversary of the relationship between Kenya and U.S. The questions around investments in technology and artificial intelligence, the climate crisis, also security matters, Kenya's role as an anchor state, and also the other question of Haiti, which came up about Kenya sending its troops to Haiti. I think that is another very contentious question. So all in all, I think it's a very interesting and comprehensive visit. But like with all other visits, comes with a lot of other questions, specifically around Kenya's role in championing the rest of Africa. Is Kenya really just in this for Kenya, or is it also considering up the whole of the continent's interests on security and economics and politics? And then the broader question of what will the cost of Kenya's intervention in Haiti be? These are big questions that Kenyans are very concerned about.
Talking of Haiti question, there was a question raised about whether it was appropriate for Kenya to prioritize Haiti instead of Kenya's security.
That was an interesting question, and actually the reporter put it to the president that Kenya has its own security challenges in the Rift Valley, and why are Kenyan police going to Haiti and yet there's the problems in Kenya? I think the president tried to answer that skillfully by saying security is a collective global responsibility, that you can, you know, walk and chew gum at the same time. In other words, Kenya can deal with internal security questions, but also deal with foreign security questions. But I think what was not answered within that is what happens when Kenyan troops start encountering casualties. What will the tolerance level of the Kenyan people be for their young sons and daughters, you know, getting killed in a Caribbean island of which Kenya really has no national interest, other than, you know, this euphemism of global peace and international security? I think that's one big question. And I think the other question, which is still not unresolved, is who will pay for this? Because I think there's still some tension there. Kenya wants the payment up front in terms of the cost for the deployment. And within the UN system, it's done on a basis of reimbursement. So I think those are some other gray areas which were not quite addressed in relation to Haiti.
That was David Monda, a professor of political science at City University of New York. He spoke with VOA's Douglas Mpuga from New York. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 24th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program is Samson O'Malley Sports. Analysts say populism is on the rise the world over, And South Africa is no exception. From Johannesburg, Kate Bartlett reports on how many political parties are using populist rhetoric ahead of what is being slated as the most important election in 30 years.
One South African political party running in elections on May 29th wants mass expulsions of foreign migrants and the return of the death penalty. Another regularly sings about killing white farmers. Yet another pushes for changing from Roman Dutch law to African traditions and wants to send teenage mothers to a former prison island.
I'm here today to tell you the only way to stop the crime, the killings under my regime, if you kill somebody, you shall be killed also. We want law and order back in South Africa.
That was Gayton McKenzie, the leader of a small opposition party called the Patriotic Alliance, who spent 17 years in jail for robbery. He was speaking at a rally earlier this year. Like populist leaders the world over, he positions himself as an outsider taking on an elite and corrupt establishment. Beyond advocating for the death penalty, he's also promised to bring God back into schools. Immigration is his other key theme, in which he constantly rails against undocumented migrants from other African states, blaming them for most of the country's woes, from the unemployment crisis to crime. He's even raised the idea of building a border wall. Political analyst Tessa Dooms sees similarities between the current political rhetoric in South Africa and the US under former President Donald Trump, who is also seeking a return to power in November, despite being on trial for falsifying business records.
I think what's becoming clear in this election is that there is almost a Trumpian type of moment that is developing, where people are resisting establishment politics and the big political parties particularly, because they feel like those parties are far removed from them, are not accountable to them, and are not engaged with them.
The Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF, the nation's third largest party, is South Africa's original populist rabble-rouser. The EFF advocates radical economic transformation, the nationalization of land and banks. Established less than a year ago, Umkhonto we Sizwe, or the MK Party, which is tipped to get either the third or fourth largest share of the vote, has also assumed the populist mantle. It's led and represented by former President Jacob Zuma, though he can't run for parliament due to a 2021 prison sentence he was given for contempt of court. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Guinea's military government this week closed three private radio stations and a television station. Spokesman Ousmane Gaoua Diallo told VOA the stations were shut down because they failed to comply with regulatory and contractual obligations. The government last November closed some stations for threatening national security. Dauda Mohamed Kamara is the editor-in-chief at Espas FM, one of the stations that have been closed. He tells me the government has yet to clarify the reasons for the closures.
The latest is that we received today, let me say, in the afternoon, another decision from RPT. RPT was what means the agents are in charge of regulation of the telecommunication in Guinea, who asked us to stop everything, and we are not any more owner of our frequencies. That is not only for Espas, it is for Espas, Joma, and Sweet FM, and also Stream Frequency. We are not any more owner of our frequencies. They are asking us to close everything, and all material should be shut down as from today.
Did they tell you why you should shut down for good?
As was I telling you yesterday, there is no reason. They just said that there is no respect of the documents that allows us to come as a radio or television in Guinea. But what is the main problem? We really don't know. Even yesterday and till today, we are in consultation with FIM, Joma, and Espas. We are in consultation to see what to do if we are going to get now with justice and take some lawyers to defend our case. That is what we are doing as from now.
As I was saying, I spoke with the government spokesperson, Diallo, and he says that your stations were shut down because you failed to comply with regulatory and contractual obligations. What does that mean?
No, it is not true. It's not true at all, because what we receive at NOS there is no part of that mansion in the north. So they cannot tell you that that's the problem. Because even as for us, we don't know what's the real problem we created in Guinea. The first time I was telling you about that, the 4th of November, they said they are taking over our science because of national security. And as for today, they are not anymore talking about national security. They are talking about we are not respecting what we should do, what we should not do. We don't know. That's the problem today.
Dawuda Muhammad Kamara is the editor-in-chief at Espas FM. He was speaking with us from Guinea's capital, Conakry. A spokesperson says the government of Guinea, Conakry, is committed to freedom of the press, but believes that such freedom must be exercised within the context of the law. The government this week closed three private radio stations and a television station. Spokesman Usma Gawua Diallo tells me the stations were shut down because they failed to comply with regulatory and contractual obligations.
Yes, it's true that our government has recently decided to withdraw the authorization for certain radio station and a television station. However, it's important to clarify that this decision was not made arbitrarily. There's major outlet filed to adhere to the term of their commitments. We've included various regulations and standards necessary for their operations. Our government is firmly committed to unfolding freedom of the press, but we also have a duty to ensure that major operations are conducted responsibly and in accordance with the law. Second, the claim that our government closed major outlets merely because they are critical is in oversimplification. While some stations have voiced criticism, the primary reason for the recent closure is their failure to comply with regulatory and contractual obligations. Our government supports freedom of the press, but this freedom must be exercised within the framework of the law. Our actions are not about silencing this, but about enforcing the law to prevent misuse of major platforms.
Usman Gawua Diallo is the spokesperson for the military government of Guinea, Conakry. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. Under the Biden administration, U.S. veterans have received more than $5.7 billion in expanded health care benefits. But former President Donald Trump argues that veterans were better off when he was in the White House. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias looked at what the veteran population will likely need from the next president.
Nearly 890,000 U.S. veterans exposed to toxic substances during their service and their survivors have already benefited from the PACT Act, a law that President Joe Biden signed in 2022 to expand health care and benefits to those affected. On Wednesday, Biden announced that 1 million PACT Act claims have so far been granted.
Trouble breathing, cancer, brain cancer. Folks, you suffered long enough. You shouldn't have to prove that your illness came from their service. But thanks to the PACT Act, you don't have to prove it now.
Biden underscored that more than 30 bipartisan laws supporting veterans, their caregivers, and survivors had been passed under his administration.
We've increased resources to end veteran homelessness, hired and trained hundreds of additional mental health providers, specifically to help veterans end the silent scourge of veteran suicide.
Donald Trump, Biden's Republican rival in the 2024 presidential race, argues veterans fared better when he was president. Trump expanded on his argument in a video posted on the online video platform Rumble back in November.
We have 33,000 veterans in this country who are homeless and living very poorly, I might add, and it's a shame. We helped them a lot during my 4 years, and it's all been dropped.
If he returns to the White House, that will change, Trump added.
On day one, I will sign an executive order to cut off Joe Biden's massive spigot of funding for shelter and transport of illegal aliens and redirect a portion of those savings, a very large portion, I might add, to provide shelter and treatment for homeless American veterans.
The National Association of Social Workers hailed improvements to veterans' well-being under both the Biden and Trump administrations. The latter, for instance, increased veterans' access to support and care outside the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. But challenges remain. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with basketball. The 2024 Basketball Africa League playoff games gets underway on Friday in Kigali as 8 teams set their sights on the coveted championship. The 2024 BAR playoffs will feature performances by local and international music acts. Nigeria's Adekule Gold will grace the opening ceremony, while a long lineup of Rwandan artists are all expected to perform throughout the competition. Basketball Africa League President Amadou Gallo Fall announced on Friday that the opening playoffs game between Libyan side Al-Ahly Lai and South African side Cape Town Tigers at the BK Arena is already sold out, a move he attributed to the growing impact of the competition over the past 4 years.
The competition on the court, have been really remarkable. We see the basketball level continuing to rise. We are attracting top talent from around the world. We are getting top talent from Africa to participate across the different teams. So this is really has been a proud moment for us, in especially with this expanded season.
In tennis news, Tunisian Ons Jabeur will take on U.S. Sakia Vakeri in the first round of the Roland Garros in France. The three-time Grand Slam finalist and former world number two reached the quarterfinals of the tournament in the previous edition. And out of football and to the CAF Champions League, where Al-Ahly will host Esperance of Tunisia in the second leg of the final of the CAF Champions League on Saturday. The stakes are high as both teams vie for the title, with the Egyptian Giants seeking to capitalize on their home advantage against the formidable Esperance team in Cairo. With the first leg ending in a goalless draw, Al-Ahly will be eager to win at home and clinch their 12th title, while the Esperance team will aim to surprise the home team. And in Nigeria, Super Eagles manager Finidi George hopes to harness the best of Nigerian players playing abroad to develop a squad with a winning mentality. Coach Finidi George was speaking to journalists on Thursday after he was named as the new coach of the Nigerian national football team last week.
So I think definitely something good is going to happen with my appointment of the Super Eagles head coach.
From West Africa to East Africa, where Ugandan national football coach Paul Put has summoned 28 players to enter residential training next week ahead of two crucial World Cup qualification matches against Botswana on the 7th and Algeria on the 10th of June. Uganda is fourth in Group G with 3 points, having lost to Guinea and beaten Somalia. The coach says he is focused on building a team for the 2026 World Cup and AFCON 2027 that will be hosted in Uganda. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, May 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Queen, the Black Princess, or other super heroes with afros are growing in popularity in comics. This week on Our Voices, we will dive into the comic world where creators contribute to the richness and diversity of the medium through their art in ways that resonate with all races and genders. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900.